Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we are going to do a requested topic, route maintenance. So we have a lot of CCAs out there who are getting routes for the first time. We have a lot of new regulars who maybe they're bidding on a first route, or maybe you've been a T6 for a long time and you're about to take over your first route, or maybe you're just a CCA who got yourself on a long-term opt. Hey, good for you. So whatever the case, there are a lot of people out there who need a refresher or instruction on how to actually maintain a route. Because what you have to realize is that it is your responsibility to keep your route updated and organized. Nobody is going to do that stuff for you. It's not your T6's responsibility. It's yours. So if it's your route, you take care of all this stuff. And all these things that I'm going to talk about, they all take time. They add to the time on your route. They're an investment of hours, but they have to be done. When you first take over a route, you have to put in the time to get it straightened out, to get it all cleaned up, to clean out the boxes. All these things that I'm going to talk about, they all have to get done. And if you have an easier route, maybe you have undertime. And so if you're not familiar with that, undertime is like the opposite of overtime. Oh my gosh, I have so much mail today that my 8-hour route is going to take me 9 hours. Well, the opposite can happen too. And oh, I have so little mail that my 8-hour route is only going to take me 7 hours. And this is where that undertime goes. Instead of giving that hour to management, that's the time that you spend to make sure your route's totally dialed in and squared away. So, anyway, again, this is an appropriate use for that undertime. And if you don't have undertime on your route, a lot of people never do, their route is just always 8 hours or more, then this is also an appropriate use for overtime. Because again, these things have to be done. Whether you can do them in your spare time or not, they still have to be done. And so sometimes that means you're going to have to put on your 3996 that I have to update my edit book or whatever it is. You know, it takes time and it has to be done. But this time is an investment. And once you get your route squared away, it makes things easier on you and it makes it easier on your substitutes, your T6, CCAs on your day off, whoever's carrying your route when you're not there. And all this time that you spend getting your route maintained pays for itself. Once it's done, the upkeep is a continuous process, and you're going to have to do upkeep pretty much every day, but it takes a lot less time. And once your route's squared away, everything becomes easier. All right, so let's get into it. The first bit of route maintenance that I want to talk about is your 3982, or the pink cards, most people call them. These are the cards that where we track our forwards, where we keep track of who has forwards on file. And there are cards for every street on your route, or depending on how you organize it, you may have a card for every bank of boxes at an apartment complex, or maybe every set of cluster boxes, or, you know, there's a number of different ways that you may divide your pink cards, but generally it's going to be like a pink card for each street, or maybe two pink cards, or however many you need. And these cards are kept in the leftmost cell on every shelf, and they correspond to the deliveries that are on that shelf. So, for example, on my route, my first shelf, I have Meadow Glen Way, Meadow Glen Circle, Brookview, Meadow Glen Drive, and Rimcrest, although most of my Rimcrest is on the second shelf. So my pink card's on the first shelf. I have one for Meadow Glen Way and Meadow Glen Circle, because they're just two little streets that don't have a lot of forwards. And then I have one for Brookview, and then I have one for Meadow Glen Drive. And then, since Rimcrest is mostly on the second shelf, I have my pink card for Rimcrest on the second shelf. And again, those are all on the far left side of your case, and there's even a little slot over on the far left that says 3982, and that's where those things go. So on these pink cards, there are spaces where you're supposed to put the 3982 labels, which are the stickers that you get from wherever they come from at your station that have the information when people move. And so on this 3982 label, it'll have the person's name and their old address, which is the address they move from, presumably the address on your route where they don't live anymore. it'll have the information about their forward, like what the start date is for the forward, whether the forward is permanent or temporary. And if it's temporary, it tells you the end date. It'll tell you whether it's for the individual, for a family, or for a business. So if I put in a forward and it was a family forward, any mail coming to the address for GeekX would be forwarded. If I put in an individual forward, then only the mail for Alan GeekX would be forwarded. And it's an important distinction. The 3982 label also includes the forward code, which is a code that the workers at CFS, the computerized forwarding system, type in order to look up whether there's a forward on file. Anyway, the code goes like this. It's the first four letters of the person's last name and the last three digits of their address. So my code, if I put in a forward, might be GEGA729. So that's how those codes are created. Again, the first four letters of the last name, the last three digits of the address. And so if you got a piece of mail that was going to my old address and it was addressed to Classes of Mail, you would know that's for me. Oh, he's the host of Classes of Mail, that guy with that dreamboat voice. But that mail's not going to forward correctly because it doesn't have my name on it. So if you were a diligent carrier, you know it's my mail, you know it should get forwarded, you're going to actually write that code on the mail, GEGA729, circle it, and that way when it gets in front of that human at CFS, they'll know that's the code they have to type in order to get that mail forwarded. This is all covered at length in one of my first episodes, PARS, CFS, and Move Left No Address. All right, so moving on. The forward expires after 12 months, so if it's a permanent forward, we're going to continue forwarding their mail for up to 12 months, although periodicals only get forwarded for 60 days. And then after that 12 months, the forwarding system still handles the mail, but it returns it to sender with a sticker on it that says, hey, Alan moved, please update your mailing records. So that mail goes through the forwarding system for a grand total of 18 months. So once you get your PINK cards all dialed in, then what you have to do is periodically go through and cross out the forwards that are no longer valid. I usually just cross mine out after a year. Honestly, very little comes after the first month or two anyway. But I'll go through and cross out all of the expired forwards. And also, of course, any temporary forwards that have expired. And then once every forward on that card is expired, then you throw away the card. You don't need it anymore. I see some routes at my station that every shelf has like 30 PINK cards on it, and there's no reason for that. All those forwards are long since expired. All they do is make it harder to find the active forwards that you're looking for. So, incidentally, I guess it's worth mentioning why we use those cards. It's because when you're out on the route, you get a piece of mail that somebody puts their flag up and they write on the piece of mail. Usually they write something like wrong address. And what they mean by that is that person doesn't live here. It was mailed to the wrong address. And so you have to figure out, okay, what am I going to do with this piece of mail? Am I going to forward it or am I going to return it to sender? So let's say it's going to 4148 Meadow Glen Way. When I get back to the station, I'm going to take that piece of mail and match it with my PINK cards. I'm going to pull out my PINK card that's for Meadow Glen Way, and I'm going to see if I have any active forwards for 4148 Meadow Glen Way. And if I do, see if the name matches. And if it does, then, okay, this is now a piece of mail that I should be forwarding. This is what used to be on the scanner in COA update. Oh, boy, do I miss that feature. I know you guys do, too. But anyway, now we do it the old-fashioned way, with actually looking it up one by one on those stickers. And this is another thing that takes time, but it's time that you're credited for. And management can't tell you not to do it. That's how it's intended to be done. You take that piece of mail that you're not sure about, you look at the PINK card, and you see whether it's a forward or not. So at my station, the printer that makes those 3982 labels was out of commission. And so we went months, many months, never getting anybody's forward information. So it turns out that you can actually ask management for a printout of your active forwards. So I told them, hey, give me all the forwards for the last 6 months. And then they gave me a choice. I could either get them in route order, alphabetical order, or time order, I think it was. So I just went in route order. And then on my PINK cards, where I would normally put the sticker in the outline space, I just hand wrote. the information off of the sheet that management gave me, and it works the exact same way. So sometimes you have to do that. You have to actually transcribe onto those 3982s yourself. Either way, all this stuff has to be done, because otherwise how will you know whether there are active forwards on file or not? Now, I'm lucky on my route. I deliver to a reasonably stable neighborhood. It's all residential. I only have, like, it's all single family homes, and I only have like 370 deliveries. So I don't get very many forwards. If I were on an apartment route that had 1500 deliveries and people are moving in and out all the time, that's a big chunk of work. But I know that when you're delivering apartments, sometimes when you have low mail volume, it can be really tough to stretch that out to 8 hours. Well, this is one of the things you do when you have low mail volume. You do your pink cards. And you're going to do other things that we're going to talk about as this episode goes on, like update your edit book, also called your red book. This is the information that you give to AMS, the address management system, and it's how you make changes to your route. So to make the changes, the process for small changes, like to individual deliveries, is pretty straightforward. You're going to take a red pen and find that delivery in the list. It's all in route order. In fact, that's what defines your route order, is what's in that edit book. And on the left-hand margin, you make a red dash so that the AMS worker knows that this is where a change is going to be. And then over in the appropriate field, you make the appropriate change. You cross out, like, for example, you can change an address from vacant to occupied. And so you would cross out the little V, and now they know it's no longer vacant. Or you would add in a V. You can change the cell size on your case. Each cell is 1 inch. And so if you have a house that suddenly started receiving a tremendous amount of mail, you might want to update that to 2 inches. So you cross out the little one and put a 2 in the appropriate spot in your red book. And then, of course, you're going to have to shrink some other cells in order to make room for that. All that stuff's done in the red book. You can indicate whether somebody has a seasonal forward. Like if you deliver to a university town, there's probably tons of people that are only in town during the school year, and then they move for the rest of the time. So that can be indicated on the red book. One of the things that I love to do is indicate when a place is a business, like a home business. For example, I deliver to these group medical homes, and they're run out of a house, but technically it's a business. It's like a little hospital or convalescence home. And so I mark it as a business in my red book. And the nice thing about that is then our weekly ads stop coming to those places, because the weekly ads only go to residential addresses. So these are all changes that you can make in your edit book, and changes you should make in your edit book as appropriate. The folks at AMS, they want to know that. And your mailers want to know it too. They want to know how many residential addresses you have, how many active deliveries you have, things like that. This is also where you make changes to your line of travel. So if you're just on an opt and you're going to be doing the route for a month, you know, maybe you're not going to change the line of travel. But if you're on the route long term, then by all means, you can change the line of travel. Often you have to get permission from management to change the line of travel. I've had them push back on me before for trying to change my line of travel. But it's something you can do. And, you know, if it makes sense, like, if the computer set up your route, like during the last route adjustments, there's going to be some nonsense on there. And so, again, you can make those changes. It's a little complicated on how you actually mark the edit book to make your changes. There's a line of travel worksheet that you can use that'll make things a little bit easier. The first time you do it, maybe even the second time, it's best just to have somebody walk you through it. It's not the kind of thing that I can really explain here, at least not as part of this bigger episode. So, again, another thing you can do with your edit book, thing you should do with your edit book. And then another thing you can do is set up your route to make it easier for the subs when you're your substitutes when you're away from work. So on my case, for example, on my case labels, I have added little notes that says, like, this is parking loop 1, parking loop 2, parking loop 3. This one is a deadhead. And this one has, this is a driving section. You know, all those little things can be added onto the case label to make it easier. I have these street names that repeat, like Meadow Glen Way and Meadow Glen Circle, and they have the same house numbers. So in the notations area, I wrote way on the under the house numbers on that street and circle, circle, circle under the house numbers on the other street to make it more obvious that, hey, there's a distinction here between Meadow Glen Way and Meadow Glen Circle. Also with businesses, you can put the name of the business under there to make that easier to deliver. You can mark the days that businesses are closed. You can do all sorts of different things on your case labels to make things easier for when you're not there. What you should not do is take a marker and write on the plastic sleeve that covers your case labels. That is not okay. Those plastic sleeves should be reusable. It's wasteful to just throw them away every time you change your case labels. And there's a process for just getting that stuff printed right on the label. All right, so that's that. There is a book that the union puts out that instructs people on how to fully utilize their edit book, and it's 97 pages long. So I'll probably cover that in another episode at some point, try to kind of simplify that and let you know the main points. But there is that book out there if you need a resource right now for how to do your edit book. And then another thing you can do to help set up your substitutes for success when you're gone is make a note, make a list or a chart of your route splits. And what I mean by that is, like, today I wasn't at work, and so somebody else is going to carry my route. But sometimes what management will do is what they call a case and split, where one person cases the route, and then they just divide the route up to be carried as auxiliary assistance by a number of carriers. Maybe they'll split it in two or three, four, even five ways. So I went ahead and made a list that, hey, if you split my route two ways, here's the split. It goes from the beginning up to, up to Sunny Dunes Court, and then it goes from the business plaza on Sand Hill to the end, or whatever it is. I got it all written down somewhere. If it's a three-way split, then you're going to split it the first part here, the second part here, the third part here, because some random person who's casing your route up while you're out, they have no idea how long each section of your route takes. And so this helps to describe, like, this is the way you split it up into even chunks. And then I'll also add the approximate time duration for each of those splits, because they may not be perfectly even. You know, maybe one's an hour and a half and the other one's an hour 45. And so I'm going to give my estimated time duration for those as well. It's not something you have to do, but it can be really helpful when other people are carrying your route on your day off. All right, so that's the edit book. Next, box maintenance, the mailboxes. It is up to you to maintain those boxes and to make sure that they're all tidied up and that they have, like, address labels inside the boxes. So this is especially important for apartments. You use the tray tags, like at the end of your DPS tray. There's that little plastic sleeve and then the card that goes inside of it. And that's what you use to label your boxes. You take one of those plastic sleeves and it's like a sticker. You stick it to the mailbox on the inside, and then you use that tag to put whatever information you want inside the box. So you'd put the name of whatever good names are at that box, if that's what you want to do. I have plenty of boxes where I don't have the name in them because it doesn't matter. Just deliver the mail. And, you know, again, there's very little turnover on my route, so it's not really worth putting the names in. But that's up to you. Right, you're going to put whatever active forwards are going on right now. You put the forwards in, you put the apartment number or the suite number in there. And most importantly, you need to clearly mark your boxes that are vacant. So here's the method that I use to mark my boxes, like when I was doing apartments. The tag that comes out of the DPS tray on the backside is blank, and it has this, or maybe it's on, well, whatever. There's a big black line that's like two-thirds, divides it into one-third and two-thirds. So I put that line toward the bottom, and so the smaller section is on the bottom. And then above the line, with a blue Sharpie, I'll write the good names, the names that I know are the people who live there. Or sometimes I'll put deliver all names, and I'll write that in blue. And then under the line, in the smaller section, on the lower right, I put the unit number, and I do that in black Sharpie. And, you know, try to write it big, try to write it as clearly as possible. And then also below that line, I'll put whatever active forwards there are, and I write those in red Sharpie, along with the expiration date. So that Everything's uniform. It makes it really easy to read, makes it easy to spot the changes. And then if a unit is vacant, then I'll take that card. Still down in the lower right, I have the apartment number written in black. And then above the line in red, I write as big as I can, vacant. And so it looks really different from all the other labels. All the other labels have blue there. This one has red, and it's a really big word, vacant. So, again, when everything's uniform like that, it makes it easier to interpret, even if you're in a hurry and not really paying attention. And that sets you up for success, and it also makes it easier on whatever substitutes are there on your days off. Likewise, with your box maintenance for apartments, you're going to want to check at least monthly with the property manager and see who's moved out, what units are vacant right now, what units have people freshly moved in, so that you can, again, update your boxes and label whichever ones are vacant. All right, another problem that you have at apartments, and this can happen at other boxes as well, but it's really common in apartments, is that the mailbox gets full. So when the mailbox gets full, you don't just keep jamming mail in there. Well, you know what? If you can, yeah, go ahead. Jam the mail in. If it fits, it ships. But eventually that mailbox is going to get so full that you can't put any more mail in it. So what do? This is actually something I get asked surprisingly often at my station. So what you should do is once it's full, you can't put any more mail in, then you're going to pull all that mail and you're going to hold it at the post office for 10 days. And let me reiterate, you pull all the mail. There are people who will pull like only the preferential mail and set that aside, and all the other mail they'll put into the UBM, and that is not appropriate, at least not yet. So when that box gets full, you pull all the mail, bring it back to the station, and you're going to hold it for 10 days. Remember, during this 10 days, when their box is full, all that mail is still their mail. It's not yours to dispose of. So once you pull all that mail, then you're going to indicate in the box what the story is. Like at my station, we actually have this local form that says, hey, your box was full. It's being held at such and such post office until such and such date. And you need to make arrangements or claim it within 10 days or it'll all be returned to sender. So that's what we use. At your station, if you don't have those, you can just use a 3849. Put a 3849 in the books, write the appropriate information in there, write the end date, you know, do the best you can with the form and let them know that, hey, you got 10 days to claim all this mail. So during that time, since you're the one doing the wrap maintenance, you have to make a determination of whether or not that residence is vacant. If it's an apartment, it's easy. You go ask the property manager, hey, does anybody live at apartment 325? And they're going to tell you, oh no, they moved out weeks ago. So if the address is vacant, then that 10-day hold becomes what's called an HFO, a hold for forward order, where you're going to keep that mail and see whether the people put in a forward. If they eventually put in a forward, then you're going to go through that big pile of mail, and any preferential mail, you're going to forward. And then any non-preferential mail is going to go into the UBM. Standard nonprofit marketing bound printed matter all goes into the UBM, and then the preferential mail gets forwarded. Incidentally, if there's an ancillary service endorsement, like forwarding service, return service, address service, whatever, that would all get forwarded as well. If they put in that change of address, if it's vacant and they don't put in a change of address, then what you're going to do is return all that mail as attempted not known or put it into the UBM as appropriate. And then you're going to do what's called a move left no address, which I talk about in that CFS PARS and move left no address episode. And you can do that right on your scanner. You go to option N on the main menu, move left no address, scan one of the barcodes, put in the information, and boom, there's that move left no address. And that lets the forwarding system know that, hey, these people don't live there anymore. And the forwarding system is going to automatically intercept any mail for them and return it to sender. So again, those are your options if you find out it's vacant. You hold the mail, and then at the end of that hold, you're either going to forward it or return it. If it's not vacant, then at the end of the 10 days, if the people have not picked up their mail, then you're going to return it as unclaimed. So all of the preferential mail gets returned to sender as unclaimed, or if it's non-preferential, it goes into the UBM. undeliverable bulk business mail. And then here's the quirky thing. After you've returned all this mail as unclaimed, now, if it's not vacant, you're going to resume delivery. So you can't just keep returning the mail forever, because they need to at least have a chance to claim that mail. So once this process runs its course, then you start filling up that box all over again and resume delivery. And maybe this just happens again and again for people who aren't good about picking up their mail. All right, so that's full boxes. Next, you are now responsible for ensuring that houses have house numbers that are visible, that they have valid mailboxes, that they have good access to the mailbox, all that stuff. That is now up to you to enforce. As far as I'm concerned, now you get the pleasure of enforcing that. I know when I do auxiliary assistance on other people's routes, I find it really frustrating when people don't have house numbers. How am I supposed to know whether this is your mail or not if I can't find your house number? Now I got to try to figure it out, go to the house in front, the house in back, look at the pattern, look across the street. And all this could be solved if you just put your freaking house number up on your house. So there's a form, PS Form 4056-4056, and it says your mailbox needs attention. And then it has all these checkboxes that your lid is broken, or it's too high or too low, or it's not close enough to the sidewalk. Or another one on there, it's like one of the last boxes, is you need a house number. And it needs to be displayed on your mailbox or on your house where I can see it or whatever. All of these things are on this form, PS Form 4056-4056, and you can put that in their mailbox and say, hey, you got to fix this. You got to address this. I can't just be putting mail into a milk crate that says mail on it. You need a proper mailbox. So again, this is up to you to enforce this. And if the problem persists, you can cut off the mail. Of course, you're going to want to talk to your supervisor before you go cutting off somebody's mail, because then they get mad and they call, and you always want to be ahead of problems like that, and you talk to the supervisor first. But if they have this busted-ass mailbox that, you know, has nails sticking through the lid, and, you know, or it's hard to open or whatever, and it's this continuing problem, absolutely we have the right to cut off the mail. So that's the deal with maintenance. And I have cut people's mail off before over house numbers. You know, and I tell them, I don't need anything fancy. I don't need it lit up, or, you know, even just a piece of paper on the mailbox is adequate. Just give me something so that I know what the house number is. All right, next topic is cleaning and organization. So it's up to you to keep your truck clean. I know in my area, in Las Vegas, we have these contractors who come around and spray down the outside of the trucks, but they never touch the inside of the trucks. And so the inside of the trucks are absolutely filthy. In some areas, as I understand it, there's actually service that clean the inside of the truck as well. And oh, that would be so nice. But we have no such thing here. And man, some of these trucks are absolutely disgusting. Well, when it's your route and you're now responsible for that truck, now it's your truck. Well, it's not your truck, it's post office, but whatever, it's the one you're assigned to. Now that's your truck that's disgusting and filthy, and you don't want to do that. So you can always get supplies from your custodian, get rags, get cleaning products from your custodian. What I've actually done with my truck is I take it to one of those pay and spray car washes where you put in the tokens and, you know, you can spray out your car. And I take everything out of the truck and I just hose it down. And I spray the heck out of it. And I, you know, everything seems fine. I haven't had the truck catch on fire yet or everything short out. You know, I try not to spray it directly onto the electronics or whatever. But absolutely, I've cleaned out my truck that way. So that's your responsibility, to keep that truck clean, to keep, you know, dust the dashboard and get the garbage out of there and stuff like that. And when you're done with the truck each day, you empty out the truck. You take everything out. There should be no empty equipment left in the truck, and you shouldn't be leaving your personal effects in the truck. And there's two good reasons for that. One reason is because you can accidentally leave mail behind. If there's a bunch of crap all cluttering up your truck, and then there's also like a letter sitting there, it just looks like more clutter, and it's easy to miss it. It's easy, you know, you just overlook it because everything's a mess. And you know, it can accidentally get left behind. And that's the same with empty equipment. There could be mail inside of some of that equipment, inside of one or two of those buckets, and now you're delaying deliverable mail. And that is not okay. That is absolutely something carriers get busted for. The second reason you don't want to leave anything in the truck is because it's not your truck. That truck belongs to the post office, and you are simply assigned to it. So you never know when the maintenance, vehicle maintenance is going to come and take your truck for repairs, or take it to the crusher and just replace it with a Metris or a ProMaster or whatever. And that's it. Your truck's gone. So now that nice little boombox you had in there is gone. Your Bluetooth speaker, your satchel, you know, whatever you had in there is just gone. They ain't going to ask, like, hey, can we take your truck away from you today forever? You just show up for work one day and it's gone. So don't keep any of that stuff in your truck. Some spare forms are okay. You know, maybe a couple change of address cards, a couple of vacant cards, something like that. Some 3849s. But even those, not in bulk. Just a few that you need, you know, in case you run out during the day. So for me, the way I handle it is I keep all of my stuff in just this big-ass backpack. It's like a Vietnam-era military backpack called an Alice Pack. And I've got my satchel in there. I've got my pith helmet in there. I have pens and markers and 3849s. And my rain gear is in there. My hand lotion. You know, all kinds of gloves. All kinds of stuff is in there. Extra pens. All that stuff. It all just goes in my backpack. And every day, I take that backpack out of the truck, bring it into the station, and then the next day, I put it back in the truck. Or I used to use buckets for that, like the postal buckets or bins or tubs. Some carriers at my station use a wagon, like they have these folding wagons, and they have everything in the wagon, and they just roll it right out to their truck. So, again, all that stuff, it is not to be left in your truck. It's not your truck. Another thing that I'll do with my vehicle is I keep my own spare vehicle key. And that's probably not allowed. I'm probably breaking some kind of rule by having my own spare key, but I do it anyway. Because keys go missing. On your day off, somebody else has those keys, and if they don't get put back properly, now you just don't have a key to your truck. And that's happened enough times that even the spare keys for the truck that management's supposed to keep locked up ran out of those too. And then adding to the complication for me is I have a jump seat on my truck and it's used for trainees. And so I'll have a key and the trainee will have a key. And then the trainee goes home with the key. Or if somebody else is training, they'll use my truck and the trainee goes home with the key. So keys go missing on my route. So I actually got my own key made. I saw like a mobile locksmith out in front of somebody's house. And I'm like, hey, can you make a copy of this key? And yeah, of course they can. It's like the world's simplest key. And so it was like $7 and boom, now I got a spare key. Again, that's probably not allowed. So, you know, proceed with caution. I don't know what the rules are on that. All right, next, with being clean and organized, you need to keep your case organized. Being organized helps you to find stuff. It helps you to not waste a bunch of time when you're looking for extra pens or 3849s or anything that you're looking for. You know, when you open that drawer at your case, you need to be able to find stuff in there. So I like to use subdividers in there, little like drawer organizers, and put this stuff in here and this stuff in there so that when I open the drawer, I know exactly where that stuff is. It takes a little time to get the drawer organized in the first place, but once it's organized, it's much, much easier going forward. And then it's a very minimal effort to just keep it organized. And then the last thing, your case, there is a section on your case that's reserved for carrier-endorsed mail, for your attempted not knowns and your no such numbers and your forwards. And at my cases, usually at the carrier case, it's down in the lower right, but I've seen some that have it at the top right. Either way, that stuff is for your carrier endorsements. And it should not be filled with a bunch of spare forms and a bunch of other crap and your personal effects and things like that. That should be kept clear to be used for its intended purpose. All right, so those are some of the basics of route maintenance. It's not everything, but it's a lot of the big stuff. So the last thing I want to talk about is a little bit more philosophical, and that is that once you get your own route, it is important for you to realize that you are not the boss of your T6, of your carrier technician. That person carries your route on your day off, and you are not their boss. Their boss is the supervisor. In fact, if anything, the T6 is your boss because a carrier technician is actually a higher level assignment than a regular carrier. So don't tell them what to do. I mean, you can give them advice, you can give them recommendations, you can make requests, but you're not their boss. And you're not in charge of them when you're not there. Even when you are there, you're not in charge of them. I was a T6 for most of my career, and it would drive me crazy. Like, some of my carriers would do their route out of order, and they would expect me to do the route out of order. And I'm like, dude, why don't you just make the changes on your edit book? No, this is the way I like it. All right, well, you can like it all you want. Don't expect me to do the wrong things out there and, like, do the wrong line of travel just because that's what you do. Or they'll tell me, like, these houses don't get ads. No, man, I got to deliver all the mail. You can't be telling me to do something that's going to get me in trouble. You're not my boss. If I get in trouble for, you know, not delivering deliverable mail, and I go into the investigative interview, if my defense is, oh, well, Bob told me not to deliver ads to that house, that ain't going to fly in the investigative interview. So, moral of the story is, you are not the boss of your carrier technician. Same for whatever temporary sub is carrying your route, and same for CCAs. You are not any of their bosses. I am not any of their bosses because it's not my route. It's not your route. That route belongs to the post office, and you are simply assigned to it. So you can make requests of your subs, but ultimately how they deliver it, it's between them and the supervisor. So the best thing you can do is to do what you can to make it easy for them to deliver things the way you want it. You know, make sure that everything's clearly labeled. Like with vacants. I know it drives regular carriers crazy when somebody else puts mail in a house that's vacant. Like on their day off. You come back from your day off and there's box or mail sitting in this box that's vacant. Well, it's up to you to make it really obvious that that mailbox is vacant. So I've seen some carriers who take those tray tags and they just turn them upside down so that, like, the barcode side is now face up. And, oh, that means it's vacant. No, that doesn't cut it. That's not obvious. Or I've heard that, like, on cluster boxes, if I put a rock inside of that mailbox, that means that that one is vacant. Dude, give me a break. A rock? I'm supposed to know that that's vacant? No. We have at my station, and I'm pretty sure it's nationwide, these big green cards that say in nice bold letters, vacant. And that's obvious. So if you have one of those in the box in a place where it can be seen, and your substitute puts mail in there, okay, now you have reason to be upset at them. But short of that, you know, again, this is your responsibility to make things easier on your subs when you're not there. Now, all of these things that we've talked about today take time, but it's something that has to be done. It's part of having a route, and you get paid by the hour. So when your route is clean and your truck is clean and it's all organized, then that means nothing gets lost, nothing goes missing, and that's just another way to help make you discipline proof. All right, that's it for today, guys. Thanks for listening. I will catch you next time.